Recording live from the Hoban Law Group here in Denver, Colorado, I'm your host, Eric Singular. We're sitting alongside president and founder of the Hoban Law Group, Bob Hoban. Today we are talking about how COVID-19 could impact consumer behavior, and we are joined by Alexandra Curley, the head of insights at Prohibition Partners. Thank you for taking some time to be here with us today.
Oh, it's a pleasure. Thank you for having me.
And you are based in Ireland. We'd love to hear a little bit about how your day-to-day has been impacted by the coronavirus.
Oh my goodness. We kind of went into lockdown over a week ago now, since the 12th of March. So all of the schools and childcare centres have been closed and playgrounds. So a lot of people have been working from home now for over a week. We're slowly going mad. But the Irish Taoiseach has just announced even further lockdown measures today. So every shop now will close unless it's an essential retailer, so pharmacies and supermarkets only, I think. So, yeah, big changes to life, but we're doing what we need to do to protect the most vulnerable members in society. So hopefully we'll flatten that curve and ride this one out.
Well, and it's interesting you bring up the closing and of, you know, businesses that are deemed non-essential. And the leaving open of businesses that are essential. And as we think about how this pandemic could impact consumer behavior, how do you think that relates?
It's going to have a huge impact because aside from the virus itself, we're all facing a big recession now, possibly like one we've not seen before. Now, in my previous life, before I joined the cannabis industry, I worked for Mintel, a market research company. And I worked there during the recession where we noticed that actually people are staying home more. It was the start of the big night in. And what you see then is people foregoing the big luxuries and trading in for smaller luxuries. It's actually known as the lipstick effect, where people will buy little treats that will make them sort of feel better during these times. And actually, it's something that we're going to be keeping a close eye on at Prohibition Partners to see just how this is going to impact people's use of CBD or consumer goods that contain CBD within them. We're likely to see more people staying home. They might be smoking more cannabis whilst they're watching TV, especially if they don't have to go to work in the morning. They might be sort of a bit more freer from drugs testing over in the US, for example. But we're seeing an increased focus at the moment on people's health. And it may well be like, you know, CBD has long been touted as a bit of a panacea for all ailments, and it helps to calm and alleviate anxiety. So it could be that people will turn to CBD as a bit of a rescue remedy for themselves during these times as well.
Are you seeing companies in your neck of the woods that are selling these products claiming that they cure the coronavirus or address the symptoms of the coronavirus? Because we have seen that here in the U.S., and we've certainly seen it on e-commerce platforms where certain product manufacturers are coming out and saying that this product will help treat or cure your specific condition. And in the U.S., at least a couple of weeks ago, local governments, state governments have gone in and tried to shut down those types of companies. It gives our industry a bad name. Are you seeing some of that activity?
To be honest with you, it's terrifying that companies are doing this. I think it's really preying on people at their most vulnerable time with heightened anxiety and concerns for their health. We haven't seen it so much here. I mean, obviously, it's going against labeling legislation when they are making health claims on products that they're not allowed to make. I think anybody who applies common sense will know that it takes a very long time to be able to establish health benefits of products through rigorous clinical trials. And given the relative recency of the coronavirus in our lives, we know that the last few weeks or a couple of months is not long enough to be making those claims in a substantiated way. So I think that it is something that we all need to be very mindful of. There's a lot of misinformation. There's a lot of opportunists looking to shore up sales in difficult times. But also other things that I've been reading about would make me think that perhaps people will, the cannabis industry will be affected with people turning away from smoking and inhaling the product. Obviously, cannabis is said to have anti-inflammatory properties. There's been some research coming out of France where they're saying don't use anti-inflammatories. You'd better, if you think that you have the coronavirus, use paracetamol, don't be using ibuprofen. And so therefore, there would be a bit of a question mark as well within this industry for people to think, well, is it safe for me to be using cannabis or CBD during these times? But also for us to be aware of the fact that, you know, if people are smoking cannabis, that has a huge impact on their lungs. The virus has a long-term effect on respiratory function of some patients, and smokers are at higher risk of severe infection from the virus. So again, for people who have been smoking cannabis, it may well be that they think twice and they switch to alternative formats such as oils or edibles, for example.
And could you talk for a second, Alexandra, about the treatment of cannabinoids as an ingredient in the European Union? I'm thinking specifically about the novel food legislation or designation. We have, you know, in the United States, we have the Food and Drug Administration, which is currently, you know, bigger fish to fry now with the coronavirus, but trying to figure out how to regulate these products. Is it an ingredient? Is it a dietary supplement, et cetera? Can you speak a little bit about what that process and where that is at in the United Kingdom and elsewhere in the European Union?
Oh, look, it is so unclear over here. I regularly try and get my head around where we're at, and each country seems to be different across Europe. The substance is classified as a novel food under well-defined regulations. There's also other directives and regulations that address the sale of low THC products, including the standardized definitions there of medicinal products, herbal medicines, food and food supplements. Now, in some countries across Europe, it really can vary by how the CBD has been extracted as to whether it's classed as a novel food. So it's very much a grey area. And my observations of the industry at this point in time is that I think it suits some of the governments to maintain that grey area. I'm living in Ireland at the moment, and we've seen several raids on CBD stores by the local police force. They weren't with just cause. It was down to a lot of misunderstanding around whether the CBD contains THC or how it's been extracted. So it's still, there's a lot of work to be done around really solidifying and clarifying those regulations in Europe.
Well, Alexandra, I like how you talk about the gray area, and I do believe that there is significant, if not overtly disclosed, desire to keep this in a gray area for the short term, because that builds the case, if you will. It builds up the political will and builds up some political capital for decision makers that decide whether or not this product should be sold as a food or a supplement or something other than perhaps an approved drug or pharmaceutical product. So the more that it's out there, the more that the toothpaste comes out of the tube, so to speak, the more likely politicians can say, well, look, people are taking it. It's produced safely. People seem to get some relief for it. So therefore, we're going to carve a lane for it. I don't know if that's the approach that I'd prefer if we had to build this from scratch, but it seems to be working. It certainly works in North America, and that's how the cat got out of the bag here. But I'd like to shift topics a little bit and talk about the idea of what the coronavirus will do as it relates to this industry. And the specific word I'm thinking about is collaboration. As we think about how collaboration has evolved in this industry, and as professionals, we all try to work with one another and recognize our strong suits and our weak points of service and operation and collaborate with others to make, to deliver a service to a client. there has not been the world's greatest level of participation and collaboration based on my observations in this industry as a whole. I think it's because it's so new and everybody's sort of on their own path, and that pathway is going to be successful based on whatever that individual business or individual person's perspective of success is. Don't you think that this virus and the economic downturn that will likely flow from this as we recover over the next weeks and months will require our industry to collaborate, participate, maybe even consolidate faster than would have otherwise have happened?
Oh, absolutely. You know, it's the one positive thing that I am taking from this coronavirus is that it is indiscriminate, and every single country around the world is being affected by it. And for me, on a personal level, it made me fully appreciate how interconnected the world is. When you see how a virus can spread so rapidly, it really gives me hope that if we turn that into a positive and we change our attitudes, we look out for one another and we have a more community approach, that can spread fast as well. And exactly as you say, I think collaboration, coming together to work together rather than working against one another. We're actually in the process of producing a series of blog posts looking at the impact of COVID. And the initial research that we were doing earlier this week, we were saying, well, all the stocks have tanked, but cannabis has tanked even more than the rest of the market. Why is this? And really trying to understand that. But I think that during tough times, that's when people need to work together rather than pull apart. And that's the only way that the industry can really rise up and become successful. And goodness knows, it has enough hurdles to jump through regulation, legislation, coming out of the shadows of the black market. I don't think now is the time to be each for their own. I think it's about coming together as an industry to really make sure that we are part of the new economy that emerges following the recession that's likely to follow COVID. Perhaps I'm a little bit idealistic there, but I've often believed that because the cannabis industry, the legal cannabis industry, is in its relative infancy, especially in Europe, it has a real opportunity to set the foundations in a positive direction, in the way that they want to work together and the good that they can do for communities. So I absolutely do agree, like collaboration and consolidation are going to be key themes that we'll probably see emerging following coronavirus fallout.
So Prohibition Partners has worked very hard to establish itself over the years as a thought leader, as a data provider, as an educator, as a content provider across the board. And it's certainly something years ago that drew our attention. And that's why we've tried to establish a strong relationship with your organization and impressed by its work all the time. As you begin to eliminate or at least modify a significant part of the business that you folks are in, and that is delivering information, with the fact that events are probably not going to resume any semblance of normality for the foreseeable future, how do you adapt? How can Prohibition Partners continue to do what it's been so successful at doing, spreading the word, providing good information, creating opportunities for folks based on that foundation, when you can't get face-to-face anytime soon, or at least that's what we understand things to be?
Sure. Now, well, firstly, thank you very much for your ringing endorsement of Prohibition Partners. It's very much appreciated. I think we've been around since 2017, so we're in our third year. And one of the key attributes of Prohibition Partners is that we're extremely adaptable and agile. We move fast in response to what's been a very fast-moving industry and now what is a fast-moving economic health climate. As you rightly pointed out, conferences have been a big thing for us. We hold a conference, our Cannabis Europa, in London every year, part of European Cannabis Week, and we're looking to make that digital, looking into virtual symposiums and conferences. It's the only way that we can continue to provide that platform to people to talk and to network and to share their knowledge and experience to help continue to drive this industry forward. I think it's absolutely vital that we continue to enable and facilitate those connections across the industry for people, especially in times like these when it might seem more challenging. But I think there's also some huge positives to this. By going digital, it may well also be that more people are able to join the conversation. So those people who might not have been in a position to fly to Europe and stay in hotels and spend time away from their family, they can dial into a virtual conference. They can meet with more people. And in many ways, it might actually bring more people together in the same virtual room than a physical conference ever could. So we're very positive. We're staying very positive at Prohibition Partners. We are reading the market. We're looking for ways to adapt and change. It's one of the reasons that we've also just launched some consumer research so that we can better understand consumers. I know from having studied consumer goods markets during recessions that the one thing that businesses really need in tough times is solid advice, solid data that they can build good strategies on so that there's not guesswork. And that's one of the key things that we're looking to do during these difficult times is provide even deeper levels of data for people so that they can make informed business decisions. And hopefully the industry will thrive as a result. Adaptability, that's our key thing.
Right. And as Bob said, Prohibition Partners produces all of these wonderful reports on the different global regions and the different cannabis markets within those. And, you know, all of those different regions are very different. Bob, I'm wondering if you would speak to this for a second. When you think about collaboration, coming back to that point, does collaboration look different in different global regions?
Absolutely. Well, I would say absolutely, and then I'd love your take on this, Alexandra. It seems to me that, you know, as you create a legislative or a regulatory framework in a particular jurisdiction, whether that be a particular country in Latin America or a particular country in Africa, or the patchwork of laws that exist across country by country in Europe, collaboration means different things. In the United States, where the marijuana side of the industry have sort of come out of the closet, so to speak, and it is not exactly, it's not legal at the federal level. It's not necessarily warmly embraced by mainstream industry, mainstream businesses, and the masses, although that's changing rapidly. That creates different levels of collaboration opportunities than it does in a market that might be completely wide open. When I was recently in Davos, Switzerland, for the World Economic Forum and working with some of Alexandra's partners over at Prohibition Partners and looking at some of the folks and how they approach this thing in Europe, the opportunities for collaboration are very, very different than what we're used to. You have mainstream businesses. You have real pharmaceutical companies. You have real institutional entities that have operated for decades and decades and have sterling reputations in the business community that are looking very, very closely at medicinal cannabis and other opportunities in the cannabis space. That's not the case in the United States and in North America, maybe with Canada as an exception because of its progressive legislation. But it's similar to what we're seeing from a perspective in other environments like the Latin American environment where mainstream business operators are now looking closely at it. So my point is collaboration takes different forms based on the regulatory framework, based on the cultural significance and or the stigma that culturally attaches to this industry jurisdiction by jurisdiction. Alexander, what's your perspective on you know what I just mentioned? It seems like collaboration means different things in different parts of the world based on that foundation.
Oh, 100%. And actually, when I was doing research for our African cannabis report, it really struck me that many of these African nations, you know, 2/3 of people are living below the poverty line. You have farmers who are illegally growing cannabis because they can earn more money. And that is the difference between putting a meal on the table or not at the end of the day. With the decline in smoking, their tobacco cash crops are no longer in such high demand. And they're looking for new ways to bring in income. But it struck me, I have a master's in the geography of third world development, and it really struck me as the need to collaborate across all levels of society as well, to make sure that then if growing cannabis becomes legal in order to help shore up income for these impoverished nations, there also needs to be other factors put in place, you know, making sure that these farmers don't suddenly switch from growing nutritive crops to growing cannabis because it will bring them in more money. So really understanding the interconnectivity of cannabis, the cannabis industry, in how it's going to affect normal people's lives, even people who are not using cannabis as well, within these regions. And so it really does, it's like that chaos theory, isn't it? You know, butterfly flaps its wings and there's a tsunami on the other side of the planet. But it's about really understanding how interconnected everything is and collaborating every level, right through from that local farmer all the way up to government and then the big cannabis companies who are making sure that product is grown in the right way and to the right standards. So absolutely, depending on where you are in the world, that collaboration is going to be very different. Across mainland Europe, a lot of the time I look to what's happening across the states, because we have Luxembourg, who, well, up until this crisis, I'm sure it will continue, we're looking to legalize cannabis for recreational and medicinal use. But then we start to understand, well, it's a landlocked country. What impact does this have then on its neighboring countries? If its residents want to travel with cannabis, can they do that? So then we look to the United States and we say, okay, well, Tennessee has said, well, we will tolerate cannabis patients bringing their cannabis into our state. So I think, again, that level of collaboration at the legislative level is so important as well. And to understand, well, even if the country next door doesn't want to legalize, they need to tolerate and respect the choice of their neighbour to legalize. So again, as you say, like, collaboration takes many different forms, and it really depends on where you are in the world as well as to how positive collaboration can be. And ultimately, that's the end goal, isn't it? You collaborate to have the best possible outcome for everybody involved. It just takes a different form depending on where you are in the world. But I do think that we can look to more mature markets, such as the US, and see, well, how are neighbouring states dealing with these potential frictions, and how can that be applied within mainland Europe and neighbours there? So absolutely agree. It's one of the things that I love about working in this industry is no region, no two states are the same. There's so much diversity and there's so much to learn. It's such an exciting part of its development, I think, to see where the industry is in 20 or 30 years' time. It'll be so different.
Well, Alexandra, we are so appreciative for you to bring your insights to the Hoban Minute today. And we will stay tuned.
Thank you so much for having me.
Of course. And we'll stay tuned to everything else that's coming forward from Prohibition Partners. Again, you guys produce excellent data and information for this industry. It's an essential service for sure.
Yeah, thank you. Yes, thank you very much for taking some time out of your day, and we'd love to get you back to your family, and I'm sure trying to get work done in the house is oftentimes frustrating with children, but it's also something that you got to cherish right now, because it's not always going to be that way.
Absolutely, it's a new normal for now.
That's right. Thank you again.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you for tuning in to this episode of the Hoban Minute special series on coronavirus and cannabis. You can head on over to hoban.law for more information on this podcast or the Hoban Law Group. If you have any ideas for subjects that we should be covering or any questions you want to pose to Bob or myself, shoot us an email at media@hoban.law. And stay tuned for the next episode on this special series, Coronavirus and Cannabis.